Blog Talk Radio.
Playing Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah.
Back, listen, enjoy the vibe. Sip something, light it up, enjoy the ride. Cause the Sports City Chefs is on the night. In the kitchen cooking up, they on the rise.
Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs,
Yes, Lord, we got a brand new present.
What?
Joe Biden, we riding, I pray you heaven sent. Word from the wise, my people stay ahead of it.
Come on,
I've been relevant, trying to survive the elements. It ain't no love in these streets, these dudes telling it. Case go from cold to hot, state evidence. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Kick off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside, the tailgate timeless is alive. The call-in number is 929-477-2759. We got you locked and loaded for the next 60 minutes or more. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you are here with Sports City. An electric night for everybody in the BTU. If you don't know what BTU stands for, that's the Basketball Talk University. And everybody that's in my family with the NBA on CH, I got my co-host with me on different channels, different networks, different applications here in the wide world web and things of that nature. We have Gray Poupon, Chris Barnett in the building. Welcome. How are you feeling this morning? I mean, that's great. I can hear you on NBLCH. I can't hear you on BTR. I got to get you to open that up. But great stuff, great night. He actually had a big night, you know, with an NBA legend and one of the big names in the NBA PA, if I'm saying that correctly, with Kiki Vandeweghe. And it went on for about a good hour or so. And we will be trying to get that out to people. We're waiting for DT to get in the building. Excellent stuff. I'm happy to, you know, be in the presence of Mr. Barnett, you know, and things of that nature, man. But we'll try to kick this off and wait for DT to get in the building. Now we're in the month of March. We can't hide it any longer. March Madness is here right now. Top 25, the things that I wanted to touch on as well. And, you know, people with bubbles and their bubbles being bursted and seeing if they're the last four in, last four out, things of that nature. And the usual suspects is normal with the blue bloods and the big names that could try to make a run, especially in their, I want to say, more or less respected conference, if you will. So I know there was a game with Oklahoma State and Cade Cunningham going off for 40, but in which recently he just suffered an injury. And we'll be out up against West Virginia. Will this be a lingering situation for Oklahoma State? Because they need every last bit of this latter part of the season to make a push. If not, if he can get back out there and be effective with a lingering injury, that's something to think about. How do you feel about that? Okay, we're having a little technical difficulty. I don't know if it's on BTR or your mute. I'm trying to figure that out right now. But definitely an interesting situation with Cade. The injury that he's suffering right now at the beginning of March and in front of the conference championships and things of that nature. hopefully they can make a push in the Big 12. And this is something that I did want to cover is the Big 12 with all of the teams that are in the respected conference in the Big 12 also. Top to bottom, this is going to be an interesting run for the conference championship. Oklahoma State, I say, sits in the middle of the pack. And the notable team that you think of right now, Baylor's played the best, but they suffered a recent loss. Kansas is actually on the uprise, and I can't really figure out what Texas or Texas Tech is up to. But in the midst of this, who do you feel like is one of the interesting teams to make this push to win that conference championship, at least within the Big 12, because a lot of these teams are interesting? I don't know. I'm trying to pick this up on one end. We're trying to figure this out. I know I'm getting that feedback right now. But definitely with what Kansas presents, especially this is a team that I don't feel well about just because they fall apart a lot of the times in this point of the season in the month of March, where they'll have an interesting season or look like they can make a push for Elite Eight, Final Four, National Championship, and something, you know, comes to a crash and burn for this Jayhawk team. They actually had to pick up stride later in the season and actually make this interesting, especially approaching the conference championship. That'd be one team I feel like can knock off Baylor the way that Baylor's actually been playing. Right now, the way that Baylor has been playing, they have one loss. I really feel like they're the cream of the crop in the conference, but I feel more or less that they can actually be beaten, especially if their shots aren't falling, especially on their last output in the loss. You know, if their long-range game isn't working, they try to get to the rim, but we're getting blocked and stopped at the goal. That's big. So we'll see if Kansas could be one of the guys that can disrupt them. I want to see if Texas can turn this thing around because they had an interesting start to the season, and it's starting to be questionable at this point in time as we get to the month of February and enter this month of March, if they could put what they had, that early magic of the season, in the play right now. Texas Tech is one of those surprise teams within the division. As you know, I'm a Georgetown fan, so watching Mack McClung over there and actually being given the keys to the team is one thing, but for them to have that shock value and that pop and flare in the pan to win some of these games and steal them late from teams, that's something that these teams in the Big 12 have to be concerned with and not you know, live by a stretch of a margin, more or less be ready for play-by-play basketball and possession-by-possession. That means a ton right now.
I was actually on the court. Can you hear me?
Can hear you a little bit.
Okay.
Wait. I got you. I got you now. I got you now. You're good now. You're good. Okay, I'm going to try and keep rocking until you get back into position. Okay, so while he gets back into queue and get this thing taken care of, like I wanted to get into a couple of the power conferences, especially the ones that me, Deshaun, and Chris have been talking about. Big Ten play will be coming in. I think that they're probably the ones that are getting everybody's attention with all the teams that they do have here that made enough noise throughout the considerable season right now, and the approaching March is going to be pretty hectic in that Big Ten Conference Championship, where you have the likes of Michigan, you also have the likes of Illinois, and hoping that Ayo Dosunmu could get back due to the injury that he suffered to his face. Iowa also being probably one of the best or biggest talks, if you will, across the nation, and Luka Garza probably being the clear-cut winner to the Naismith Award, but there are names out there, just like I said, with Cade Cunningham putting up a 40-point night for Oklahoma State, but I don't know how this is going to pan out with him fighting or dealing with an injury. And if he's not available or his play declines due to the injury, I think that's a horrible situation for him to be one of considerable names. And that's actually in the Big 12. But just considering the teams that are in the Big 10 also, we had Deshaun here, and he's a Michigan State guy. And knowing Michigan State can actually be one of those teams that can win the conference championship if they can actually put that in play, that would be great if we can make it happen. Or see if Michigan State can make it happen. But I don't know if they have enough gas in the tank to make it happen. Just clearly because of the game that they lost. And that's the same sentiment that I shared toward Ohio State also. Ohio State has been up and down this season and losing a couple of interesting games in this last past week within the conference. So, I mean, Chris, to mention a few within the Big Ten now that we have you back, I mean, how do you feel things are panning out while this conference championship is coming back around?
I'll tell you what, I am worried if I'm Illinois because I think Michigan's going to have their logo painted everywhere on the campus. And I'm starting to get concerned about Ohio State. I alluded to it last week. I didn't really have a lot of faith in them. I think that even Purdue could be considered a better team at this point in the season. I think Maryland, Rutgers, Michigan State, man, that's going to be some tough sledding to get one of those guys into the tournament. If Sparty can get that run in, maybe win a couple of games, I think they're in. I just don't think Maryland or Rutgers will be able to win enough games to consider really a play-in. I really like Michigan to carry the tournament with possibly Illinois if they can get past Michigan. But other than that, I don't really think there's a team that can really beat them in a tournament style play, but that's why we're here, because March Madness is about to spring and anything can happen. So I'm not going to count out Sparty or actually Wisconsin for that matter either. I think Wisconsin could also be a dark horse, but they're trending in the wrong direction. So, you know, it's starting to separate at the top. And I think that Michigan is pretty much the clear favorite. And I really would worry if I'm Illinois, because I think Michigan wants some payback.
Oh, definitely, I agree that the Michigan lost that game. That was clear cut, a beat down. And the crazy part about it is Michigan being one of the top teams in the nation, and everybody considering Juwan Howard to be potentially or is the coach of the year, he has to go back in there, get to that bulletin board, and draw that up to make this a revenge situation, if they will. But I disagree with Wisconsin, though. I think they've been trying to save face for them and make them be top 25 relevant, and they're falling out of the top 25. I think as of this coming week, they will be a team on the outside looking in. I think that their morale has been shaken up. If they can't get back to their defensive ways and slowing teams down and holding these games to like 50 or 60 points, Wisconsin will be not only out of the conference championship within the Big Ten, but they will not be dancing in the big dance, a.k.a. the national championship or the big party, if you will. I think they will end up being an NIT team and end up being probably one of the stronger teams in the NIT if they could win it, unless they give them an at-large bid. And right now, I don't feel like they're at-large right now. I really feel like their bubble is busted. But if I'm looking at everything in on a bubble within the Big Ten, I'm scared of Ohio State right now. Even though they are a top 10 team as of now, I think they will end up falling out of the top 10 because of the games that they've lost. But I don't know how they will approach this conference championship, but I know they'll probably end up being in the big dance. But they've suffered some losses that might have messed with their mentality approaching these games. But this is the Big Ten. The Big Ten has been very competitive also this season. I feel like Minnesota may have a trick up their sleeve too, knowing that they have the bigs in the paint to actually corral rebounds and get the ball going the other way. That helps Minnesota, but they have not been winning their big games this season, but they've also pulled off a fair share of wins. So I do give Minnesota some credit also. Both of those Michigan teams, being Michigan and Michigan State, I really feel like Michigan is the clear-cut head-and-shoulder team in the state right now. Michigan State, they're going to have to put this consistent basketball together game by game. They can no longer hide and just think that, oh, we're going to put it together later in the season. Like now, this is do or die, because Izzo could end up missing the tournament himself and being an NIT team. And there's so much stuff swirling around East Lansing, Michigan, that I think this would be good to get away from the distraction of everything that's been happening outside of the program with Michigan State. Indiana was one of the teams that I thought that could actually have some flair. And you know, Dale Davis' son, Trace, this guy is a monster, but it's like where the rest of the team is, I do not know. They actually had an interesting start to the season, but been losing games late, and I really feel like they can actually steal a game or two and shock a couple of these teams within the Big Ten championship. But I don't know if they're ready for a semifinal run. I definitely don't see them in the finals. But Indiana is definitely one of those teams that you cannot sleep on unless they get a first-round knockout and get exited early. But like I said, the notables before are Illinois, Iowa, Michigan, Ohio State. I really feel like Rutgers could put it together, but they're trending in a different direction also. Purdue has like a 7'4" center, and they are playing up and down basketball. I feel like if they played the possession-by-possession basketball correctly, they could actually steal a game or two also in a conference championship. Chris, is there anything else that you'd like to add to that?
About Indiana, like here locally, there's already people trying to see if they can move on from Archie Miller.
I've seen the article. They were talking about Archie Miller, but I don't know if they were more or less talking about getting rid of him. That is interesting because I am an Archie Miller fan. I do like him as a coach, but it hasn't translated since he's gotten there. And you know that that's a hard crowd or a group of fans to please being out there in Indiana. And if they're not getting the basketball that they are expecting, I think they will be asking for his head. So, I mean, I need to hear more about that. If you have some of the information that they've been actually speaking on toward Archie, even though they have been I agree. I feel like they have been underachieving, and I think they could do more within the respective conference.
Yeah, no, there's a smaller self-branded, it's called the Daily Hoosier. They really just follow Indiana Athletics as the school's publication, and they're saying that, you know, an end-of-season spiral could set Archie Miller's seat on fire. But here around on the local radio stations, like 980 The Team, they're actually saying that a first-round exit could actually have IU do a buyout, and they just actually transition and move on. It's getting rather contentious here in Indiana for that IU basketball. I just wanted to put that out there that in the tournament, we might see a different type of IU team because they actually might be motivated to play for Archie Miller's career, or, you know, at least his job here at Indiana currently.
That is incredible, man. And now that puts fear into the mind of people that are Hoosier fans to watch him end up leaving and then them having to be on the coaching search again. And it's like, I want to say within the past 10 to 15 years, they have not really had a coach settle in and be that guy ever since Bobby Knight. It's been a hot seat ever since, and it's hard to appease that crowd. I feel bad because it's Indiana and notably one of the bigger colleges across the college basketball spectrum, but, like, the competitive nature in me is like, well, keep continue to suffer, like you try to put this together, but I don't think this will last long. I don't want it to be a first-round exit and them having to search again because this is what Indiana's been made of over the past, like I said, 10 or 15 years. There's no coach that found solidity in that position. I want to go over a quick conference, I want to do this quickly with this conference because I know you probably don't like this conference as much, but it is in the West Coast. The West Coast Conference, being where Gonzaga is, the number one seeded team in the nation, I mean, who do you feel has a shot? I feel BYU has a legitimate shot to knock them off. San Francisco played good early, but I doubt it. I don't know about anybody else like San Diego or St. Mary's potentially, but everybody else, I really feel like they'll end up getting knocked off easily. Does Gonzaga run this table and continue to just be undefeated until they get to the big dance to try to position themselves for a national championship?
I think you're pretty much nailing the head. The only team that can beat them will be BYU. And in order for them to do it, they're going to have to actually hit about 80 to say 85 points per game. They have that ability if all their shots fall. You know, with wins over like San Diego State, you know, it's shown that they can play with some big guys and win. Other than that, you know, it's tough sledding in the West Coast Conference. Gonzaga just seems to have a vice grip year in and year out. Loyola Marymount might be able to run and do an upset, but Gonzaga would have to be having one of the worst games that they could have, you know, in recent memory. So that would be your only two teams from my end. It would be BYU or Loyola Marymount.
I had to get that out there because it's like they're the number one ranked team in the nation. It's like I can't continue to overlook that. But it's something that people pick on. It's like, oh, Gonzaga's not playing anybody. And it's like where they are. Like, they're in the state of Washington. They're in the Northwest region. So they have to play the games that they're given. And I had to try to give it some legs while people continue to pick on them on a year-by-year basis. But they're the lone unbeaten in the top 25. So I had to give them their credit or their due, if you will. So now we are in the midst of the SEC, right? And I know that I've been actually picking on Coach Cal as much as possible. And Coach Cal run this table in this conference battle or the conference championship battle, or do you feel like they've suffered far too much damage in the season and this will be an early exit, or them winning one game and losing in the second round? How do you feel they could match up with the likes of, let's just say, Tennessee? And I don't know what type of Tennessee team we're going to see, the early portion of the season or the ones that slowly fall into the bottom of the top 25 or out of the top 25. LSU, now you see me, now you don't. And I think the cream of the crop within the conference, and I know people are tired of hearing this from sport to sport, but Alabama's been the best team within this conference. Florida also is a good team in the conference as well, but I think Alabama, to me, is the best team right now within the SEC. Your thoughts if Kentucky could actually turn this thing around and win this conference championship and get into the tournament as best as possible, and any other team that has been mentioned or not mentioned, thoughts on the SEC?
Well, I'll tell you what, I share in your desire to talk about the Blue Bloods and how they aren't really living up to their, you know, reputation, especially Kentucky. We've been hard on him. But, I mean, if you just look at what they do, you can't really get excited about them, right? Like, I mean, they lose to Richmond. They lose to Georgia Tech. You know, this is not – these are games that are supposed to win. And, you know, they're losing. And I just don't see them getting any type of consistency to make a run. I think at best they could win an opening matchup and then lose the next round. But I think what this is a byproduct of is Coach Calipari's live and die by the one and done. I think he's going to have to reconsider going a different route, because I think recruiting is only going to get harder with the expansion of the G League Ignite teams and the overtime teams. So I think Kentucky needs to be worried and adopt the new recruiting philosophy. I agree with you about Tennessee. I don't understand kind of how Bruce Pearl's had his team fall off the map a little bit towards the end of the season. It could just be like a little bit of overplaying. They might be a little bit tired. I mean, they've played 23 games, but if I remember correctly, their schedule is condensed in a short period of time due to the COVID scheduling. But I want to shout out two teams also. I mean, I agree with you with Alabama being the top of the conference, but I would be remiss if I didn't bring up Arkansas, who's right on their heels and a great team. I think they would have a shot. And I want to put out Missouri. They're not ranked, but they're 15-7. They have a great wins on their resume, 4-1 against AP, I think. So I definitely would keep an eye on Missouri as a team that could also make a run into the tournament.
Do you have any shock value in Vanderbilt at all?
No, not this year. I mean, I talk about falling off. Like they had a great run for, you know, a little over a decade, and now all of a sudden, you know, they're back to the bottom, kind of inexplicably, right? Like I really am kind of wrapping my head around it. You think that they would just be better, but they're 3-12 in conference, and they're not really playing any inspired ball. They did win their last one out, but I don't see them having a puncher's chance of shocking anybody.
Right, because I feel like the way that they started the season off with Scottie Pippen's son there and what he was able to do, but then everything kind of fell apart. And I'm wondering if they could put a couple of string of games together to do something within their conference championship. But it's interesting to throw another name in a hat. But like I said, Florida would be another team that I feel like could actually excite something within this conference, but we'll see. I do like how that actually panned out. Pac-12, how do you feel about the Pac-12 with these guys moving? I really can't really find a clear-cut team that I'm giving the leg up on. I think more or less Arizona could be one strong one, but they're dealing with some issues right now, some news and things of that nature came out recently about Arizona. Your thoughts within the Pac-12 if you feel anybody can be that guy. I mean, USC was the team that was ranked within the conference, but they've lost their string of games. I don't know if they're around the top 25. How do you feel the committee will approach them moving forward, especially with the bracketology that's about to come out with all of these teams being placed? How do you feel about these teams within the Pac-12 making a push toward the Big Dance?
Well, I can already hear the collective groaning of every West Coast basketball fan. As they say, East Coast bias, East Coast bias. And the truth is, the Pac-12 is just not that good of a conference. Somebody has to win the game, so people have winning records. But are you really scared by Oregon? I mean, is UCLA, you know, causing you to have nightmares if you're a coach having to game plan against them? I mean, I don't think so. I think I would still be afraid of USC because Evan Mobley. And also Colorado coming on late towards the end of the year. They have four straight wins, and they're in the top 25, I think, in the mid-20s, like 24. They might rise up. You know, so you might look at two teams going in to get to an actual berth. That would be USC and Colorado. I don't think Arizona gets it on the heels of the news that broke out with five potential Class 1 violations. Oregon, mm-hmm. I think, needs a deep run into the tournament, and so does UCLA, simply for the fact, again, like, they're just not that impressive. And I think they really need to do some soul-searching in the offseason, and they need to go to the West Coast Conference and maybe to the Mountain West and say, hey, Gonzaga, we want you. Here's, you know, whatever endowment you need to get them to move, to get some relevancy back within the Pac-12, because at this point, Stanford, Arizona State, Utah, Washington, like, it's all disappointing. It's just really disappointing.
I agree 100%. Like, it's like everything you're saying, I'm shaking my head. Yes, like, I can't believe that this is what the Pac-12 looks like. And knowing where we come from, you know, seeing basketball from the 90s coming into the 2000s, like, the Pac-12 was a team, that you had to worry about on a night-by-night basis. This, if they play other conferences, it's almost like a pushover type of game unless somebody is fully asleep and just thinking that they're just going to roll past them. But if somebody plays inspired basketball, it's a clear-cut win. I've seen Stanford lose games that they were not supposed to, especially with the presence that they had with some of the players on this roster as well. And one of the notable guys that they have there had All-American potential of being involved, and he just fell apart with Oscar De Silva. And next thing you know, he's not even mentioned or being around or relevant in that discussion. So that's the one thing I feel about Stanford. But, you know, all in all, like, this is something that we did talk about previously, is if we could get a team like Gonzaga to move into the Pac-12. But how bad the Pac-12 looks, right? If Gonzaga goes in there and dominates, it's like, what do they say then? Like, do they start picking on the Pac-12 or the Pac-12 is just as irrelevant as the West Coast Conference, or do they finally give them their credit if they're running the table? You know what I'm saying? So they're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. If that's how I feel.
Well, that's a great point. And to that fact, like, UCLA needed 107 points to beat Pepperdine.
Right.
Like, hear that. UCLA needed 107 points to beat Pepperdine, and Pepperdine scored 98. So, you know, you have a great point. So if Gonzaga moves there and dominates, then what are we doing? Then we're probably, like, firing everybody in the executive committee of the Pac-12 and every AD, right? Because that's just insane. It shouldn't happen.
Okay, so now before I start moving into the other conferences and things of that nature, I need to get your thoughts on something that happened, and we have not really discussed it here. And I try my best, Sports City and people on NBA on CH and things of that nature. I try to stay away from controversy or stuff that gets under my skin because it really bothers me a lot. And the person that I'm going to talk about is somebody I actually like and respect what he does, but he made one of the most crucialest mistakes ever. And I don't know where his thought process went to be like a motivating tone, if you will. But Greg McDermott, the head coach of Creighton University, has been suspended by the university just because of some of the statements that he said at the end of a game in which Creighton lost and had racial monotone to it. And that's something that it bothers me. And it's something I, you know, struggle to deal with when people get involved in, you know, these situations. And Greg McDermott is a good guy. This is the worst part about it. It's like somebody that I did like, or I don't even know how I'm able to say this. Like, I don't know how to approach it. Like, I don't want to lose that love for the guy, but I don't know where his thought process may have been in finding that to be motivating, or him just being completely mad or pissed off. But your thoughts on Greg McDermott, the timing of the statement, and how does Creighton move past this? I think that they're a team that can get into the tournament, and how do they deal with the suspension? I mean, there's so much swirling around this topic.
Man, this is a time period where, as a coach, you should know better. And I can't even say it's his age, because he's only 56. This isn't as if he was coaching in the 70s at 56, when he may have been exposed as a child growing up to that type of language. It's beyond disappointing, because he's had such a great career as that young guy coming up, Northern Iowa, North Dakota State, all the way to Iowa State, to where he's at now at Creighton. His son's in the league. I just find it absolutely, you know, devastating to have such a great image, you know, apart. I think what we need to move beyond this is to have the team come out, either individually or collectively, to give us a sense of where they're at. Fortunately, you know, players can use this as a bonding moment, so play-wise, they might be able to continue. I just don't see how in the world of today's media that we can allow Coach Greg McDermott to simply be suspended indefinitely. I mean, at this point, he should have known better. It's a clear, egregious, you know, statement. He did issue an apology. Apparently, he realized immediately. But I would also say, if this is a moment to highlight mental health and stress, because what this seems to be to me is a flare-up that was passive-aggressive of a coach really upset at his team. And I really think that he probably should get some counseling to deal with some compartmentalization issues that he's probably exhibiting. And I feel bad for him and his family, because I've actually, you know, heard him speak at a couple of coaching clinics that when Brad Stevens was here in Butler in Indianapolis put on, you know, he's a very intelligent man. In fact, I think he also spoke at one of the virtual Sloan conferences as well. And he's likable, right? It's kind of like Les Miles. They're likable. And then I think that's part of the problem. We craft an image around his likability, so we're willing to accept, you know, maybe warning signs or behaviors that we shouldn't. So I hope he learns from the mistake. I hope he takes some time to reflect and become a better person. And ultimately, if he's able to do that, I would welcome him back as a head coach. But I think his time at Creighton should come to an end, simply for the fact as an institution of higher learning, where your job is shaping young minds first, this isn't right. Any type of character that you want any of your representatives and cadre and staff to exhibit, from the person working the cafeteria line to the person taking out the trash and cutting the grass. You would have already fired them. So why are we not doing the same to Greg? We're doing it because he has an image. We're also doing it because it's public. So hopefully, you know, he does the right thing, seeks some help, learns a little bit more about himself, takes a break away from basketball, and comes back, you know, with contrition. And then I will agree that the basketball world in general will open their arms back up. But it is definitely a tough one to talk about.
It's very tough, because I just, like you said, I like him. He's a likable person, but it's like, I don't want to be brutal about this, but I kind of have to. It's like, how many situations have we been in our lives where people have hidden that disgust, you know what I'm saying, or felt a certain way at the end of the day? And I don't know if this is ultimately how he feels, because he is a likable guy, and he's one of those people person type of coaches. And he said as soon as he said it, he offered to resign. And the players all admitted, no, they don't want him to go. Like, the whole team said that they didn't want him to leave. But it's like, who broke the statement out if that was what he said in the midst of a locker room? Like who recorded it or, you know, kept that on their mind to, like, kind of speak up about it, you know? So it bothered somebody, you know? So this is a very difficult situation, especially while everything is just very touchy. And I can't excuse him for it. I can't. I'm not trying to make any excuse for him at the end of the day, because that's something that my, you know, ancestors and things of that nature have went through. You know what I'm saying? Like, this isn't something that you can just overlook and just sweep under the rug at the end of the day. And this is the year 2021 where we're supposed to turn in a corner from all of this prejudiceness, bigotry, racism, and it's still, you know, relevant right now, like, to trying to erase this out of some of the minds that have come from that era or that generation. And it's tough, especially from a guy that, you know, was liked across the board. And I'm a Doug McDermott fan. His son is a great college player and still active in the NBA. And this is what was going to be attached to him. It's like, well, how do you feel? Like, are you like your father? This is something that he learned, and you probably learned from him also. Like, how do people perceive Doug McDermott at the end of the day? Like, is it a comfortable situation around him? Like, this is bigger than just him as the head coach. Like, now his family's probably affected, you know?
And, you know, I also want to say that I also feel bad for the players, because now the players are going to be used in this. And they're going to be used in it in a way that is so unfair to the student athlete. You know, they're going to say, as they are going to come together, because that's what teams do in the midst of adversity. They come together or they fall apart. And everything shown is that they're going to come together, but then there are going to be people on both sides of the spectrum who are going to try to tear them apart with asking, why are you supporting a guy like this? Why are you there? You should leave, versus the other people who will say, you know, good for you, and then you should be doing more of this. And you know, people like we had brought him up in a discussion, the Abramovich, when he went after LeBron. Like, there's going to be this, as you said, in the world, in the time of 2021, in the world we currently reside in. This is the textbook definition of an untenable position, which is why, unfortunately, if I was Creighton, I would relieve him of his coaching duties. I wouldn't suspend him indefinitely. I would just say he's been relieved. You don't have to fire him, but you can relieve him of his coaching duties, move him in an administrative role within the athletic department, so you can say, you know, we as an institution are about supporting him so he can be a better person, just as if we were going to support our, just as we support our players, to make them better people. I think that would be a way out. But like you said, man, 85-90% of the entire player base in the league right now in the NBA is African American. The number dips in college, but it's still predominantly African American in mid-majors on up in competitive basketball. And you just can't do it.
I agree, man. I, like I said, it's something I struggle with, is dealing with, like, racists or, you know, the monotone or things of that nature. And it's like the ones that you don't suspect or show you the most love is, you know, something to end up popping out some way, one way or another. And it's like, wow, how, you know, and how do we rebuild from here? Like, I want to see it happen because he's a good guy. But, like, what type of rehab does he go through? How does he get better from here? I don't know. I don't get it. But it's damaging right now. And to see him lose his job because of this, it's going to be incredible, because Creighton is one of those teams. I'm a Big East guy. You know what I'm saying? And I like to see Creighton be competitive. It's one of the teams that we get to build off of and things of that nature. I feel if he leaves, we might see the fall of Creighton University. Like, that team may fall apart in style of play, but to remove him is a different situation, and I understand and I get it. Like, if he loses his job over it, I'm not saying that I love the move, but I totally understand it, because we have to nip all of this in the bud. We have to nip all of it. Like, it can no longer live. Like, just like you said, the percentages that you threw out of him having to deal with minority players is huge. Like, he has to be aware of that. Like, and with him saying that to a roster that has that many minorities potentially on that team, they're going to take offense to that, especially after a loss and how people's emotions are on a 10. Like, I don't know. I'm actually getting rattled, like, continuing to speak about it. But it's tough, man. It really is tough, man. I got two more conferences to go, and I'll get into the top 25. Were you trying to say something, Chris?
No, I was just agreeing with you, my man.
Okay. The next one is the ACC. And, you know, like, we've picked on Duke far too long, and this is, the last couple of games actually as of today within the top 25. I want to talk about some of the games that are going to be taken off. Can Duke do this thing, or can North Carolina do this thing? Because both of them, I think, need to get to the conference final as best as possible. Or do you see somebody upsetting one or both of these teams? The potential is there. Syracuse is a team that's a upsetting monotone team. I feel like Clemson may have a trick or two up their sleeve. I don't know what Florida State can do, because Florida State at home is dangerous. When they're on the road, they're soft as cotton. And so it's interesting to see how this turns around. Georgia Tech has been strong this season. The ACC actually puts a good, strong fight in front of the ones that you know so well. Virginia, I feel like, is the clear-cut best team in the conference. But your thoughts on how the ACC will end up panning out, or how do you feel this thing will end up panning out in conference championship play?
Well, I'll give a shout-out to the Yellow Jackets and Georgia Tech. I don't see them continuing this hot streak they're on. They've won six straight. If you remember a couple weeks ago when we were talking about it, you know, Pastner was basically, for me, left for dead, you know, toiling in the wind. But the six-game winning streak, putting him at 15-8, definitely boasts his ability to keep his job. I think Duke is playing in for that first four end game, which I'm laughing because who in their right mind would have said at the beginning of the year that Duke would not be a lock? Like, if you would think a COVID-impacted shortened season, Duke would be a lock to be in there. In fact, I think Vegas even took bets on Duke of making the tournament, you know, and now they're, like, looking on the outside in. And I don't think they can do it. I don't see them being able to beat North Carolina. And that's today. I don't see them progressing into the tournament. And I think, you know, Duke itself has to take a real hard look, just like Kentucky, and figure out what it is that they exactly want to do. I mean, I would almost say they need to go back to how they recruited prior to start getting a three-year plan, and that way you can sprinkle in some of these one-and-dones on your three-year plan. North Carolina is absolutely bipolar. They are 9-1 at home and 3-7 on the road. In fact, the ACC in general on the road, I think if I remember correctly, only one has a winning record. And I think that's Virginia. And I agree with you. I think Virginia is, you know, head and heels above everybody else. But I think Florida State's the most athletic. And I think come tournament time, that is what might put them apart. If they can lock in on defense with that athleticism, they can run with anybody. One team that I would definitely say you should watch out for also, Louisville. Nobody's talking about them. They won the two in a row. They're 9-1 at home, 500 on the road, and they are a tournament team. It's almost as if they have always been designed for tournaments. So I definitely take a look at Louisville. I actually wonder if Roy Williams won't leave North Carolina after this season. He's getting up there in age, just like Coach K. They've been rather underperforming the last few years, and I don't think he wants to be in a position to force North Carolina to relieve him. And I don't think he wants to impact recruiting negatively. So I could actually see that if they don't have a good run in the conference tournament and a good showing to maybe like the Field of 32 or the Sweet 16, I honestly do think that, you know, he could actually say it's time to hang it up and maybe go into the broadcasting booth for a while. Syracuse, we all know it, man, that 2-3 zone. It'll give people habits, you know, fits. If they can't hit those shots, then Syracuse always has a chance. They're also 13-1, but I do worry with them not really being able to play in the tournament because I just don't think they have the depth that they normally do. But all in all, Florida State, Virginia Tech playing great this year too. They're mm-hmm. you know, turning bound. I think Louisville's turning bound. Georgia Tech, I'll take above North Carolina in the tournament right now. I just don't I don't think anybody's really going to be impressed overall with North Carolina, because you know what? Clemson's looked better this year than North Carolina.
I don't get it either. I'm with you on how North Carolina has been looking this season. They are flat on the road, and knowing that they have the capability to beat these teams, like, they reluctantly shoot shots. Like, they're not shooting the shot like, okay, I'm open, let me knock the shot down. And knowing this is something that I practice every day, I probably shoot anywhere from up to 100 to 500 of these jump shots, and they're not hitting these shots efficiently. And it was something that I saw this week, and Chris is 100% right, and I can't believe that I'm saying this. Watching the energy that Roy Williams had after he won his 900th game, he had no energy. It was like, yeah, so, like, I mean, we won 900, but it really made me feel like he didn't care because of how bad he's coaching. And I think he's holding himself to that. Like I don't know whether he's jaded or just doesn't have it in him anymore. Like, I this is something that's a concern for me, even though I'm not a North Carolina fan, but I know a ton of Tar Heel fans that support them. So it's like I watch them on a day-by-day, week-by-week basis, and this isn't the North Carolina that I'm used to. Like, they are struggling, and I don't know if they can put a string of games together to win the ACC tournament. That's something to think about. But you do feel strong enough for them to beat Duke today, and I don't know how this goes. I really feel like Coach K has done everything that he can to get Duke up to par, and they're not, holding the standard. And North Carolina, a ton of athletes, a ton of All-Americans, and look at their record. Like, this is bad that Tobacco Road looks like this. Like, right now, especially at the end of February going into March, that both of these teams are struggling. Like, you don't know which one of them are going to make the tournament, or if they both get bumped in an early round in the ACC tournament. Like, do they still get consideration to get into the tournament? Like, this is something that I hope the committee is watching closely. So this could get bad for both of them, that they'll be ending up NIT teams. You being in Indiana also, how do you feel about Notre Dame's shot with Mike Bray? Do you think that Notre Dame could actually make a little interesting run too while these two teams are suffering also?
You know what? No, I don't think so, but I think this is more of an off year for Notre Dame. Their recruiting was heavily impacted by COVID. And a lot of people, don't really like Notre Dame because they are Notre Dame as a brand. I think that's more now a generational thing. But I like Prentice Hubb as a guard. I just don't think he's enough alone to lead Notre Dame in the conference tournament. They don't have the defensive presence. They don't really have the rebounding presence that they're known for. So, no, I don't. But I think next year is going to be a great bounce-back year for Notre Dame. I think Coach Breen is arguably, within the ACC, other than Leonard Hamilton at Florida State, the most underrated basketball coach in that conference. And I do see Notre Dame bouncing back. But I think, unfortunately for Irish fans, I think that's pretty much it for this year. They would need an amazing tournament run in order to make this happen. And they just – when your leading scorer is only at 14 points per game and not really shooting the deep ball consistently, I just got to say no. I mean, it's kind of like North Carolina. They don't have a guy. Like, their leading scorer, I think, is what, Armando Bacot, is like at 11 points per game. Like, what team between North Carolina and Notre Dame has a player that scares you right now?
No, nobody really, to be brutally honest with North Carolina. And I feel bad because one of the kids that's on that team is from my hometown, and I grew up with the whole family, including his father grew up with my father too, and R.J. Davis. So, like, it's tough to see me watch him struggle, and they're family to me. It ain't even like they're friends. It's like the Davis family is family to my family. So it's like I don't like to see him, but he's been the talk of North Carolina on one of the players that is struggling. So it's like, oh my goodness, like, the one that I know is the one that's a part of the problem. So even though he's a freshman, he's an All-American and was one of the highly touted players coming out of high school, I think this is one of his lump seasons. I want to say this is the year that he takes his lump and hopefully bounces back into his sophomore year. But I don't know who I look at. Garrison in the paint, I don't like what he does. I mean, yeah, he can finish, but, he's inconsistent. I mean, there's so many different individuals on the North Carolina team that you really can't, you know, peg on a day-by-day basis to get you 14 to 17 points. Like, I can't see it. Like, I can't. Like, they reluctantly play ball, and this is bad looking at North Carolina. And Duke also within the respective conference.
Well, I'm still waiting for Dayron Sharp to show up in North Carolina. Like, has he unpacked his bags? Did he not get into the dormitories? Like, I remember preseason, like, he was going to be one of those potential guys in North Carolina to really blossom. I mean, at least Duke has Matthew Hurt, right? Like, the dude is killing it from three, like, 45%, 18 points per game. So, like, at least Duke has a guy that's going to make shots. And, like, if Matthew Hurt can stretch the floor enough and Duke can get, you know, some play by DJ Stewart, you know, some better offensive play, I should say, by not DJ Stewart, but Jordan Goldwire and DJ Stewart. It'd be, you know, bode well for them. But you going back to North Carolina, man, I'm sorry. I agree with you. Coach Roy Williams, we all have those pictures of Coach Roy Williams yelling, arguing, and being mad, and now it's just kind of like whining and complaining. And I think his team reflects that in his play. Like you said, you know, no interior presence, even though they have, a five-man carousel of bigs. No inspired guard play, even though they've put, you know, Kobe White and Cole Anthony in the league in the last 2-3 years. So it's definitely – it's time to move on, unfortunately. You okay. know, I love what Chris, I love what Coach Williams has done for the coaching profession. I'm happy he has his 900th win, but, you know, Father Time is undefeated.
And just like you said, another one of the bigs in Kessler, he's a 7-foot center, and he's a freshman, and he had a couple of spark games, and then he fell asleep too. So it's something that North Carolina's going to have to figure out, you know, moving forward. So I'm saving the best for last as we get close to approaching the end of the show, and that's the Big East. You know, I was saving it for Deshaun. I wanted to do it on purpose just because. But here goes the interesting thing that I look at it with the Big East, right? Who can stop Villanova right now? Like, and they've suffered some injuries too right now. So this is an interesting situation that Villanova, I think, is the strongest team within the conference. But now there is blood in the water. Can the teams come after them and get them? And now it's funny because Creighton would be a team that I think could do it. They're without McDermott right now. So that's an interesting situation. Marquette, I don't know how much Wojciechowski could get done with what he's been presented with Marquette. They are up and down team this season. Providence is definitely a strong coach team by Coach Cooley, but their consistency is where my question lies with them. Seton Hall is definitely being another effective team year by year. You do have to consider them. They're one of the last four in teams, but they did lose a game to my Georgetown Hoyas. I love every last bit of that, though, but Seton Hall is still considered a team that could potentially get into the dance, but I think they'd have to probably win the remaining games of the regular season and also have an impact in the Big East tournament, which I tell you, that's like hip-hop dancing in the Big East. And, of course, like I said, UConn probably might be the other forefront team within the conference that could contend with Villanova. They had a very interesting matchup earlier this season, but Villanova ended up taking care of business. And that's pretty much it that I feel like has strong presence to actually challenge Villanova. But if this injury looms big for Villanova, Jay Wright might be in trouble or have to put some spice on this coaching game. How do you feel about how the Big East is going to be won? Is it Villanova and the rest of the crew, or do you feel like some of these teams could catch them while, you know, players like Gillespie has gone down for Villanova?
And Jay Wright, we trust, my friend. We just have to trust on the coaching acumen and experience of Jay Wright. I mean, Creighton, prior to the McDermott issue, was probably their only real threat. They can play some inspired ball. This could really bring them together. They could go on a magical tourney run. We've seen some of these before, not in context of what happened with McDermott as the coach, but we've seen teams have adversity entering their conference tournaments. Just think of UConn and Kemba, right? Making that magical run in the tourney, that can happen. But I don't see it happening. You know, Boatwright for UConn, great player. You know, don't see the depth. Seton Hall, Xavier, and St. John's are all in the same boat, and I think they're all playing for, like, that last four in, and they would need all of them a major tourney run, especially Seton Hall, who I think they've lost their last two or three games. I wouldn't sleep on Georgetown being a spoiler in the first round. I think as of late, they started playing a little bit better. You know, if they can get a first-round upset, I'm not saying they're making it all the way, but they can get a first-round upset. I'm not really afraid of anybody for Villanova. I think Villanova cruises to a conference tourney win. And I think, though, that injury that you're saying could actually be, you know, a boon in disguise if they figure out some extra depth pieces and rotational pieces in time for the tournament. I am a Big East fan. You know, I grew up on it just like you. I just don't really see maybe Providence can shock some people, like, again, on the first round. But they're just not deep enough to go against Villanova. And honestly, I don't even think they're deep enough to go against Creighton or UConn. I just think those three teams are the cream of the crop, especially with UConn turning it on in the back half of the second part of the season. You know, they won three straight. They have a 500 record, above 500 record at home and away, which is very impressive. And so does Creighton. So does Villanova. So I would pick one of those three, but I really do think it's Illinois to lose.
Yeah, and if UConn actually met up with Villanova right now, like I was saying with the injury to Gillespie, I think Book Knight will be the guy that could put some pressure on them in the backcourt. So it'll be tough if they ended up meeting up, and shout out to Danny Hurley, actually got a 2-year extension with UConn too. So that's been, you know, big to see what he's been able to do with the organization or the university up until this point coaching there. Don't get me hyped up, man. Don't do this Georgetown stuff ever again. Don't, please, I don't want to get hyped about these guys. Georgetown has been playing horrible this year. I don't like it. So with that being said, I had to do that to end the show. We are at the tail end of the show, so I do need a plug, closeout, shout out, anything that you like to promote, especially after a good day for you yesterday. Anything that you like, Chris, we're going to shut this thing down and get on to our Saturday.
All right. Well, I'm going to tell you guys, you should tune in to the Crossover Cafe next week to hear my man Timeless and Royce King chop it up about all things basketball. Last night, he was able to support me. He came out to the fireside chat where I was able to interview Kiki Vandeweghe, the current executive vice president for the basketball operations of the NBA. And he actually debuted his own show here on Clubhouse, Good Times with Timeless. I'm definitely going to say, if you can get on this Clubhouse social media app, hit us up on the NBA or CH so you can join Good Times, because it was absolute hilarity. We had a blast last night. So honestly, I'm here to shout you out, Ty, because all of the work you do, all of the blood, sweat, and tears you've put in for the past decade is coming to fruition. You motivate me by being able to get up and do this day in and day out and cook us some great food up here on the Sports City Chefs, my man. I'm here for you, and I just want to tell you how dope I think you are.
He thinks he's slick, Sports City. No, don't buy that. That dude got to the top of the NBA yesterday. It's not about me. Yesterday during the show with the Good Times, it actually got pretty hot. if you get the rough happening in that thing, the producer and the mastermind of everything, it got pretty tense in that room, and the people to let him know, you know, as time goes on. But I'm thankful that I'm able to inspire. But I think he's being modest. And that's just the nature that Chris is, man. But he had an excellent day and excited everybody. It was unbelievable to hear him do his thing. And he's been doing it for the past 2 weeks of talking to some big-name people across the board. So shout out to him. Shout out to little Vinny. I don't want to be disrespectful. I'm going to say Vincent, though. I don't know if he called him Vinny at all, so I'm going to say Vincent because that's my nephew now. I got to take that on the chin. But you already know how this go down, Sports City. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the Chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Sports City, Sports City, Chefs, Chefs, Sports City, Sports City, Chefs, Chefs, Sports.
city chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, bloom like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again. Sports City Chefs, Chefs.
Connecticut.